Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. From building his first tech product at 15, to selling ad tech to DoubleClick, to launching one of Europe's top translation platforms, and now backing AI startups from a venture fund inside a Roman villa. Marco Trombetti is what happens when hacker energy meets long game vision. He's part founder, part philosopher, part futurist, and 100% the kind of guest we love on this show. Let's get into it, Marco. Take us back to, 15-year-old you building software before the web was even cool. What were you chasing?
Marcin, thanks so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure of being so with
awesome
you.
Awesome to have you here. Yeah, thank you for joining us.
And I have to say, and thanks for the super nice, too nice intro. So I it's true, I started very early trying to do business. I'd say try, because what I liked so much when I was young is programming, computers, coding. And so when I was about 15, I started building my first products. At that time, I'm old, turning 50 next year, there was not the internet. The only thing that was there was called BBS. That was modem, you exchange programs. And so I was building software for the problems, my problems I had. One problem is that in the car, you didn't have CD players. You only had cassettes. At home, I had CDs. And so I needed to convert the music from CD to cassette and making sure that it was filling all the space. Nobody, just the old people will understand that, but if you use a cassette and you have 10 minutes empty at the end of a cassette, when you're in the car, it looks very bad. So I was trying to create a system, an algo that was placing the songs in the proper way so that both sides were full and I could keep listening music all time. And that was, I started selling it on the BBS. And then I started, I saw the barcode scanners in supermarket that came on and everybody was using them. And all the small shops in my town, I grew up on a little town on the beach, south of Rome, very far from the big innovation spaces. And I saw all the shops that were looking at the supermarket and say, they have the barcode, they can do things super quickly, we love it. And they were looking this as a space technology, a laser that was pointing and was reading information using a laser. So they thought it was rocket science. And, I bought one of those and I realized it was just a keyboard from an integration standpoint. So I built a software for managing shops. I sold many licenses of that software and I was 16 at that time. So I started early. I like to build stuff and that's what I enjoy.
Amazing. I love the story. I love the background story. Thanks for sharing, Marco. So Translated was launched in 1999. I think I read it somewhere that you launched it together with your wife, which is interesting. And what did you see then that, others completely missed? And how it is to, launch a company together with your wife and how kind of it changes the way you lead the company and your style of leadership.
So first I have to say, as when I was 15, 16, in 99, I was 23. I was not very strategic. I was not like looking at market and analyzing like a nice McKinsey presentation, trying to understand where things will go in the future. I like it problems. And so what happened is that I met Isabel. She was a linguist, and I was studying in Grenoble. She's French, and through her, I discovered the problem of language translation that I didn't know about. And I see this translation company all around the world. They can only work with local translators. They come in the office to do the work. If you need a Chinese translation in Rome, you will find someone, a Chinese person in Rome that maybe lived here 20 years, doesn't even speak Chinese anymore. Yeah. And so I said, this is not the proper way. There is a better way. And the internet was coming. And so I said, Isabel, let's build the first internet translation service. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started. And so it's the love for a girl that made me discover a problem and then attacking the problem.
Amazing. So Italian and so French as well. You know, many people chase trends. You seem to, you already talked about it a bit. You said that you weren't really strategic and it was, you know, like, but I want to say that you seem to build, you know, 5 years early at least. How do you know when it's time?
Again, I think that there's a couple of things. I don't look at trends of what people say is trends, because everybody talks about things in the short term. Every big company is creating reports. They're talking about their quarterly results. And then someone will create a report, what's going to happen next year. And they're always wrong, because they always have bigger ambition than possible in the short term. You know, but the trick for me is that, you know, I kind of see what is reasonable in 10 years. That's my window. So I look and I say, how will the world look like in 10 years? Okay. And you know, you can make a little mistakes, but typically in the long term, like 10 years, 20 years, you kind of underestimate what is possible. So I look at that direction, and that was for translation. For translation, I said, nobody will buy translations getting into a shop. Everybody will buy those through the internet. It's the perfect things to buy through the internet. It's very transactional. You have just to outsource to someone to do a translation, and then AI will help. At one point, AI will be good enough for certain application. For others, you will need multiple layers. You know, it's, if you look back in 99, it was pretty clear that in 20 years, it would be like that. You know, so you just need to intercept those trends and build something that is aligned to that, but that solves problem today. Because if you're building today for solving the problems in 20 years, you're over. No.
Yeah.
In a certain way, you need to be like Elon. Elon is good at doing that. I mean, he's a very controversial person now, but, you know, he thinks about going to Mars, and then he break it down into things. And then he said, the first thing is I will sell a transportation to the International Space Station. Yeah. Then I'll create a reusable rocket. Then I'll create a bigger rocket. And he creates the market. You know, he has the vision, and then you break down and you build something that people need today.
Yeah, I like it. So just, you know, kind of being inspired by the long-term vision, but focusing on the problem that you can solve for people today. I know that you believed, you know, in human plus machine translation when everyone else was, you know, betting on one or the other. What's your bet today, given what's happening?
First, but look, again, you look forward, okay? Mm-hmm. And like, I've been working for 20 years where people underestimated the power of AI and translated at incredible profit, incredible growth, thanks to the fact that we were using AI a lot to help professional translators. And everybody was underestimating the impact. So translators were 3 times faster. They were making half of the errors. So it was a better translation delivered in 1/3 of the time. And people were underestimating that. So now we're in the phase where everybody is overestimating. Say, hey, every translation can be done with AI. But if you zoom, it's absolutely not like this. Give you an example. If you look, for example, to Swahili as a language, you know, you need a certain amount of data to be able to create a system like English-French, which is pretty good. And we're creating very small amount of content in Swahili, and it would take us another 500 years to have the data we have in France. Now, will we need all the data? Probably not. But still, this is not something we can solve today. So, you know, the symbiosis between human and machine will always be there, because certain kind of content in the easiest languages, then move to maybe AI. Like if you want to translate reviews in an e-commerce or a description of a product that was written by the user in a small amount of time, boom, machine translation, AI is good enough. But then if you're translating Just Do It for Nike and you're creating a global campaign to do that, I think you want to make sure you have many, many layers of humans, the best humans in the world, the best copywriters, and also collective intelligence. They should work together to try to find something which is better than a single person can do. And that is very, very different from AI. And so we have a very broad And I think this will stay for another 20 years with slowly more use cases done with AI and people translating more content as we go there.
Mm. I like it, Marco. Let's talk about building companies. You built quite a few of them. What's something you believe deeply about, you know, building companies that most people would disagree with?
That it takes a lot of time. If you want to build something meaningful, you need to invest 10, 15 years of your life.
Mm.
There's never been, and even it's so obvious, but when I say to the young entrepreneurs, they kind of, they don't like what I'm saying. Because everybody is with the dream that you invent something, and in 2 years, you know, you created a unicorn. But if you look back at what has been happening in the last 20 years, none of the companies were able to reach that value in a short amount of time. Even the fastest growing company in the history of humanity, OpenAI, you know, it was founded in 14, 15, I don't remember the exact date. So it took about almost 10 years to get where it is now. And, you know, so it takes time. And the people that are willing to invest that amount of time typically succeed. And people that give up too early don't.
Marco, you're an engineer, a philosopher, an investor, and a storyteller. How do you actually switch hats? And or do you just wear them all at once? And do you have a favorite one?
Yeah, the problem is that if like I'm like this, so I never feel I'm switching the hats, you know, because it's like when I like to you say a philosopher, I like the world, I'll take it. I like to think about how things works and how things interact for the future. And I like to build stuff, and I love to help young entrepreneurs, you know, that are going through what I've been going through in my life. And especially because I think I grew up very, very far from Silicon Valley. Very far even from a big city. It was a small town in the south of Rome. And so I felt I invested a lot of time to try to understand things. And if I knew those things before, you know, my life were probably easier. And so I have this urge that I want to make sure I leave something. I give a tool to the young entrepreneurs not to make the same mistakes, especially those that are far from the big ecosystems.
Mm-hmm. Speaking about young entrepreneurs, you have your fund that isn't just a fund; it's like a physical space. What happens there that can't happen? I don't know, in Zoom. Why does it have to be physical?
Well, first, I think that physical for us, at least what I've been building here, is not the end goal.
Mm-hmm.
It was something absolutely necessary for a new ecosystem that needs to be started. So 10 years ago, it's 2007, I converted the headquarters of Translated, and I started growing the headquarters so that I could host other entrepreneurs, local entrepreneurs that wanted to do the same. And I think that contamination was the idea. My idea was, all my customers are in Silicon Valley. I see what's happening there. Mm-hmm. It's such a big density of talent. It's not about the number. It's about the density. The fact that whatever you're doing, if you go to do an haircut to the restaurant or to get an ice cream, you will meet someone worth talking about the future. And so I said, I'll create the same density here of diverse people. And I started creating a campus where people from different backgrounds could meet, you know, and exchange ideas. And, you know, the campus is a small size. It was only 300 people, but that was starting to work already. And now that this worked, they created companies, and those companies, then they did exit. Some of them came back and are working at Translated. Some other created other company that we invested in. They're no longer here. So many of the companies are no longer here now, but we created the culture here in a place that there was no culture. And if you say one thing that is different that you can do physically, well, I think especially is not all people are designed no, they have performed in remote work. And for example, people that are not able to ask for help, they typically underperform in remote working. So if you have, sometimes you have incredible talents, that you have the talent close to you, and you have to discover by being close to them that they're struggling with something, and so you go there and you help them. And otherwise, on remote work, the people that, that typically perform more are the people that are able to ask for work, they for help, they always ask, and so they have a different character, they have different behavior, and so, you know, that will make them more successful, but we're leaving a lot of talent behind just because they don't ask for help.
True. And I actually heard it somewhere recently that, you know, you build trust not by actually helping, but by asking for help. It's like coming from this place from vulnerability. And I can totally agree that, you know, not being like this human connection is hard to kind of recreate when you're not having a human touch, being together in one space, at least for some time. What's a macro rule for picking founders to back?
Easy. I think it's the people that are in love with problems, not with solutions, is number one. Mm-hmm. So those people that love the problem of the user, mm-hmm. not their own problems, the problem of other people. And if you find those that are able to really define the problem of others and now being in love with those problems, that's a great sign for me. The second thing you need, because that allows you to also to create a non-profit. So founder of a successful business startup, then I'll say also the capacity of understanding what they truly perceive as value and make them pay a lot for that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have this mix of loving the problems of the people and also understanding what they were going to pay for and making sure they're paying a little bit more than what they think they should. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to find one characteristic, so the other is very rare to find the two.
Mm. Marco, I know that you describe yourself, you know, as an incurable optimist. What role has optimism played in how you build and invest?
I don't know many people that are pessimists and had success. I think first you need optimism if you want to do this business. You need, so I think it's pervasive, is everywhere. Is the force that makes you attack problems that other people feel they're too hard. And maybe it's not only optimism, it's mixed a little bit with being naive and estimating problems. And no, sometimes is a power that you have inside you, an energy you have inside. Sometimes it's just you don't know that this is hard. And so you jump into problem, and then maybe you stay there because you said to the people around you that you would be doing that, and so you don't give up. So it's a big, important trait for an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I agree. How can you even like believe you're going to build something or change someone's life or change the world if you're not an optimist, right? You've got to be an optimist. And speaking of, and have this level of naivety that you just mentioned, and speaking of naivety, you know, people always ask what would you tell your younger self? But I actually think that, you know, the opposite is more interesting because when you're young, you believe that, you know, you can do whatever you want. No one, it's like you're unfiltered, unbothered, but delusional to be able to, like, you have to be like that to you know, believe that you can change the world or someone's, like a lot of people's lives. And no one yet told you that you can't do something. So I think this perspective of your younger self is even more interesting to hear that, like, what would I say now to my younger self? So I was wondering, what would, you know, 15 years old Marco tell you now? What do you think?
That's a more complex one. Because you're right. You know, you always look at them on the other side. But I think what a 15 years old Marco, a young Marco, will say, make sure you build something that has an impact that me, younger Marco, will be proud of. Okay. And also I think that the young version of myself will probably say, yes, build something that you will be proud of. I think that is the thing. In the beginning of your life, you want to make sure that, you know, there's many things you can do, okay? But one important measure of the fact that you have done something that you feel is right is that you're proud of what you did.
Yeah. Nice. So do you think if you met young Marco now, would he be happy with what you've been doing?
No, definitely not yet. Not yet. I had a lot of ambition when I was young.
Nice.
So I still have to work a lot.
Marco, yeah, that's awesome to hear. It's a time of the show that I usually play a little game with my guests. It's kind of rapid fire, so I'll shoot questions at you. Fast questions, fast answers. Are you up for it?
I'm ready.
All right, let's go. So what's one Italian value you bring into every deal?
Style.
Nice. Favorite Italian phrase that applies to life?
It's not Italian, it's Neapolitan. And it says, quando o mare calma ogni strunzo è marinaio, which means when the sea is calm, everyone is a sailor.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I like this one a lot. Marco, most misunderstood thing about AI?
We always refer to AI reaching human level, but we are not the benchmark of possible intelligence. We just happen to be the most intelligent form of life in this planet. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that set the us as the maximum value. So we never think in that term.
Mm. Most underrated founder trait?
Being naive, underestimating problem is a big, big advantage.
I love it, 100%. What's a book you gift most often?
I'm dyslexic. I don't read a lot of books and I cannot. So I don't recommend many books, but I wrote one super short that everyone can read, and that's the one that I give always to them, The New Prince.
The New Prince's name. Okay. Yep. Nice. Is it, can we get it? Like, is it in Italian or is it in English?
It's in every language. It's in 12 languages. Yeah.
Nice. Obviously, like translated founder, like it cannot
Why
just
not?
Be in one language.
Why not? And will be in is also, I think, I distribute it for free. So on marco.com, the book is there.
Amazing. I'll go and check it out. Last one, Marco, finish the sentence. The future belongs to those who
build it.
Amazing. Marco, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I had so much fun, so many cool insights, and I love to hear about your story. I'm sure people will love it too. Thanks so much, and I hope to meet you in person, maybe someday in Rome.
Thank you, Marcin. You're always welcome.
Awesome. Have a great day.